There's always news impacting you in Central Virginia.
WCHV time fine.
And there's always been WCHV to make sure you know about
it. 9 inches.
News, weather, and traffic. Seville 107.5 and 1260 WCHV.
You think the people of this country exist to provide you with a position? I think your position exists to provide those people with freedom. And I go to make sure that they have it.
You know, all these things that aren't getting covered in the impeachment derangement of the media. I mentioned the Middle East peace deal that, ironically, the Palestinians say we don't want that, when it's been mostly stuff they've wanted all along. USMCA is signed into law yesterday, border wall, all these things going on, never mind the economic numbers and everything. But this is just one that I just flew under the radar, but I was talking to some folks. The Energy Department, Office of Nuclear Energy, has begun a limited program to explore opportunities for recycling used nuclear fuel. Senior official said, we're starting a small effort to look at some of these options, but it's early in development. There's no clear outcome where it's going to lead. I'll call him Andrew Griffith. I'm sure there are people that call him Andy Griffith in the office. He's the Deputy Energy Assistant Secretary for Nuclear Fuel Cycle and Supply Chain. A couple of people who were at this meeting on the Newsmakers line, Steve Curtis, Tom Dolan. And this has always been one of these facepalm moments. Why is it the French do this so well, Steve, you know, about recycling spent nuclear fuel?
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that 95% of the energy still is in the rods when they're taken out of the reactor. So there's a lot left, and it makes a lot of sense to recycle. In fact, we were going to do that in the early days of nuclear energy, and if we had, we wouldn't be talking about these problems right now. But that was stopped. They were worried about proliferation of plutonium, and so we're sitting here now 40 years later with the same problem. Our proposal is that we start looking at that again, to recycle the used nuclear fuel and move it off of the sites, ideally into a central location. And our proposal is, if a governor is the first to propose that they do that in their state, there's a huge, in the billions of dollars a year, we think conservatively $5 billion a year business that they could produce from that. And there's a $40 billion waste fund sitting in Congress that was collected from ratepayers to do exactly that. So
really?
We feel it's time to move on.
So the Congress has actually appropriated monies by way of taxing us to come up with a solution to recycling this, and they haven't done anything with it.
Well, their idea is to bury it, and Nevada I've lived in Nevada 38 years, so I'm very intimately aware of what's going on there, have refused to take it, and they've effectively fought it for 40 years, and so still it sits on the sites where it was produced. And it's very safe there. It's just costing the U.S. government about $2.2 million a day, and it's going to creep up over $1 billion a year to pay the utilities to keep it there.
Well,
so that's an expense we don't really need, in our opinion.
Steve, let me jump in here, because I think many listeners were under the impression that there's some, you know, magic bunker that all of our nuclear fuel is going into with a do not enter sign, you know, for 30,000 years. You're saying that's not the case, that the spent fuel is still sitting around by where it was created?
Correct. That not a single molecule has moved in the whole history of nuclear energy. It's really embarrassing to guys like me. The solution to this is technically the easiest part of the entire fuel cycle. And like you said, France has been doing it. So, yeah, Nevada's been effectively fighting. They've spent over $100 million of the state money to fight this over the years for reasons we can't figure out.
Mm-hmm.
But what maybe turns into a real bonus for a state that raises their hand, we're hoping Virginia. Tom's hoping Virginia that happens. And if they do, there's a very low-risk business in this that could produce, I hate to say more than $5 billion a year, but that's just the start.
Yeah.
You could enter into the next two generations of clean air production for electricity.
Well, you bring up a great point.
That business is at least $1 trillion a year.
You know, one of the great sidebars of this is truly the green energy source, but nobody, we're all afraid of it because of things that go boom in the night, or at least have gone boom in the night in years gone by. But I think one of the upsides, at least for the rabid news consumer, Steve, is that we're becoming more aware of the way that, you know, weapons-grade plutonium is enriched versus, you know, what we would use for a fuel rod for North Anna.
Correct. The difference is a fuel rod for North Anna would be about 4% enriched. Weapons-grade uranium needs to be about 95% enriched. So there's a huge difference in that. And we just need to get this education out to the public because they've been fed a bunch of radical facts that that have really poisoned them against nuclear. Nuclear is really, it's a compact waste form that's been well protected. It doesn't turn into a gas. It doesn't turn into a liquid. It's been in concrete containers the whole time it's been out of the reactor. Mm-hmm. It is really the best kind of a waste form you'd ever want to have. I mean, we're talking a lot about wind and solar, and there's not even a single thought put to what happens when we decommission those.
Well, the solar cells. I've seen some reports on the toxic waste dumps that are going to be our solar cell depositories when these things go, you know, finally have to be replaced. I mean, these things make getting rid of your car battery look safe.
It's going to be an environmental story of the next 2 decades.
What was that, Tom?
Yeah. With a nuclear power plant, it's built to last 60 to 80 years. The one in Florida, the Turkey Point, just got extended to 80 years. Solar panels and wind turbines, they only last about 25 years. So when everyone's looking at this type of stuff, they're saying, oh, wow, look how great it is. However, you need to replace it probably 2 to 3 times for the lifespan of nuclear energy. There might be a lot of money up front to get the nuclear going, but it blows everything else out of the water on size. It takes so much more room to put all of this stuff. And then again, the sun doesn't always shine. The wind doesn't always blow.
Mm-hmm.
Nuclear waste that has come out, it's not waste. It's actually usable. This could actually be stored in 3/4 of a football field stored 30 feet high, I believe.
Let me ask you.
And now you look in 25 years to take all this solar and wind, and where are you going to go with it? You can't really recycle the stuff too good. Carbon fiber blades, you name it. It's just going to be a mess.
Guys, I got to hang on to you. We got to run to a news break here. Tom Dolan, Steve Curtis, we're at this DOE meeting where the French wring every drop of nuclear energy out of their uranium fuel rods, and we don't. And we're going to get into the whys and wherefores and what do we need to do. I mean, you know, I know there's probably you and I are saying we're just trying to hang on to our Bill of Rights. We're just trying to hold on to the Second Amendment. You're talking about recycling fuel rods, Joe? Come on.
Being tuned in means who actually pays tariffs or any business tax? Seville 107.5 and 1260 WCHV.
WCHV time is 7:07. So we're visiting. Steve Curtis and Tom Dolan, working on recycling nuclear fuel in Virginia. So I remember when the earthquake happened in Louisa, Steve, and the news stories breathlessly was North Anna shut down. Which is, in the fail-safe model, if I understand correctly, what it's supposed to do. And then it shut down as if it was a scary thing. But that's exactly how, and I guess this goes into what you were saying about the way these things are characterized, the narrative.
You're right. They're built to a high tolerance for earthquake, and they're built for, you know, all the reactors in Japan survived the earthquake. It's just the one that was built down low didn't survive the tsunami.
Right, and I want to get to Fukushima.
Because of all the safety features that are built into these,
mm-hmm.
it didn't hurt anybody. Nobody got hurt from the reactor melting down. It's a big problem, but that's what reactors are designed to do, is to make sure that nobody gets hurt if something goes wrong.
I want to talk about two American examples. Of course, Tom, close, near and dear to everyone's heart is the word Shoreham, where this lobby just became the most ridiculous and you know, took what it had already crippled the nuclear industry under and became bizarre, became like cartoon characters. And I used to live out there. But beyond that, Three Mile Island, characterizing the incident at Three Mile Island to having been, I was told this by somebody who used to live in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, was five times more, there were five times as many, malfunctions in the system than there was in Chernobyl, but because of the way the system was built with fail-safes, the whole system shut down, and even to this day, there are no health concerns in and around it. The rest of Three Mile Island still operates, the Three Mile Island still operating fine. There's the one reactor shut down because it scrammed and it did exactly what it was supposed to do, but the events leading up to it were far worse than anything that happened in Chernobyl.
Well, that's not exactly. Of course, the reactor in Three Mile Island was designed far more robustly than the reactor in Chernobyl.
Well, that was kind of the point I was getting at, is that the American design is designed to have way more things go wrong and still not have anything bad happen, but Chernobyl,
correct,
they had used.
The core melted, and that's the worst you can have in a reactor. And that nothing exited the reactor except some noble gases, which were very innocuous and not a health hazard at all. So I worked in DOE for a while, and the what they said about that was a public relations disaster, not a nuclear reactor disaster. And then right after that movie came out,
China Syndrome,
that scared everybody. And so that really set the nuclear industry on its heels. There were 40 reactors ordered up that all stopped after that, and we'd have been so much better down the road. And it's all because of public relations and misunderstandings. Has nothing to do with reality. Chernobyl was not an accident. I mean, you probably understand that.
Yeah.
Chernobyl was purposely put into a precarious. All the safety features were defeated. It didn't have an inner containment wall like all of ours do, and it was purposely put into that condition by a megalomaniac in the Soviet Union era.
Yeah, no,
so it was not an accident. And to prove that, there's three other reactors that worked, sister reactors designed the same way, that worked for 14 years after that without a single problem until they decommissioned them.
And
so
Fukushima.
It's wrong to characterize Chernobyl as an accident. It was
Incident then. Fukushima, as you said, I mean, we don't build our nuclear reactors out on rocky outcrops in the ocean waiting for a tsunami to come either. So our fail-safes on places like North Anna are you know, and every time somebody turns around, they point at Chernobyl and Fukushima and say, that's why nuclear is bad. But now let me jump to France, where you said, you know, not only do they have nuclear, I believe, way more nuclear energy generation in their grid than we use, and they were
such, yes.
And so why is it France hasn't had all these problems and all these disasters if they're doing way more with nuclear energy than even the United States per capita?
It's just a very safe system. I mean, we're just as safe as France. There's no reason to think that the industrial safety record for nuclear plants is orders of magnitude better than other industries.
Mm.
So just on the surface, if you look at this, nobody would be afraid of it. But somebody's built these big ghouls and big problems and developed guys like the Sierra Club and things like that have built this up to be a real, just purposely scaring people, which to me is immoral. And we're trying to put a halt to that. We want to get the information out to as many people as we can.
Well, all right. To that end, Tom Dolan, you know, on the Virginia side, working on trying to get this through, what comes next? What do we have to do?
The major step here is education and knowing about it. You know, we're only a few people here, and it's a grassroots effort, but we do have a web page that you can take a look and learn a lot about it. You can also, you know, say, hey, we can help out or something, but it's a the website is virginia-recycles-snf.com. And that SNF stands for spent nuclear fuel, but it's virginia-recycles-snf.com. recycles-snf.com. Good place to start. You can ask us questions. We can answer it on the blog page there. Nuclear Red for education is also, we're going to be doing a, the American Nuclear Society has a Boy Scout and Girl Scout nuclear energy badge, science badge, which we're trying to get the word out on, too. It's going to take an awful lot to get people to come around and understand and, you know, get rid of the old myths on nuclear energy. But it is the one wind doesn't always, you know, blow and the sun doesn't always shine, and you need a lot of land all over our beautiful state of Virginia that's going to be covered in windmills and solar panels instead of having just a few small nuclear energy plants. If we did another four plants like the two we already have, we would be 100% carbon free by 2050.
Oh, I think that was something the governor said he wanted to do. Maybe we have a chance to bring that up to him. Guys, thank you for the visit this morning. And again, we'll put the website link out there as well. Well acquainted I am with, of course, broadcasting where the sun don't shine. So solar energy, never been a thing for me there. I appreciate it, guys. Recycling.com.